Thursday, March 21st. You know what, guys? Like, I want to draft. I want to do some leagues. Like, what's going on here? I'm tired of all these mock drafts. Let's get some real leagues going on. Podcast league in 8 days. Enter me in some leagues. I want to play.
Right. Well, the season hasn't started.
I know, but
for you to play yet.
I want to draft. I feel like if this were fantasy football, I would have done like 4 drafts by now. But people wait a little bit longer in fantasy baseball.
Well, I mean, it's on you, right? Podcast league, 8 days. Why'd you push it back so far?
So we could have more time for funny limericks. I still don't know when the other podcast league is going to be, the For the People League, but that'll be on Heath, who is not here today, so I don't get to tell him on the air. I did tell him off the air that Heath did a great job hosting and producing on Friday and on Monday. I listened to both shows. I enjoyed them very much. So I want to thank you guys for stepping up. We didn't miss a beat, and thank you all for listening, of course. I'm glad to be back. Adam, Chris, and Scott today are going to talk about a lot of things.
By the way, where were you?
So you said at one point that you found out where I was, but then you never revealed what you had found out.
No, we had no idea.
Oh. I was in Orlando, Florida for a wedding and also a quick trip to the Magic Kingdom on Friday.
Ah.
Yeah.
Beautiful Orlando, Florida.
Yeah. So we had a nice time, and the wedding was on Sunday, so I knew I was going to take Monday off, but decided to make a little 4-day weekend out of it.
Just to clarify, it was not your own wedding.
It was not my wedding.
Okay. All right. Just, whew.
I don't know why I get married in Orlando. That'd be a little strange. But no, I want to recap a few things that I heard on the last couple shows that were pretty interesting. Busts week continues. If you want to send us your busts, email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Put busts in the subject line. You still have time to submit your entry for the podcast league with your limerick. And we got news on Michael Brantley, AJ Pollock, Josh Donaldson, Didi Gregorius, and some more, spring risers and fallers. So we talked about Michael Pineda and Taijuan Walker. Rather, you guys talked about Pineda and Taijuan Walker. Introducing third pitches, slider for Walker, changeup for Pineda, having really good springs. In fact, Taijuan Walker is a riser for Scott White. But they both had bad starts. Both were yesterday? I think so, right?
Yes. Yes, they were.
Yeah, Pineda gave up 3 runs in an inning and 2/3. He threw like 33 pitches in the second inning and got lifted. And Taijuan Walker gave up 4 runs on 6 hits in 4 2/3 against the A's. So what do these little setbacks do for these trendy late-round pitchers, Taijuan Walker and Michael Pineda?
I don't think they mean much. I feel like the general rule with spring stats is to ignore them. Players are mostly getting ready for the season. It's not intended to be a competitive environment. What matters more are the storylines behind the stats. And both of these pitchers have very encouraging storylines that the stats have mostly backed up. I think Walker's a clearer case. His slider usage, we actually have data for it. He's using it a lot. And it seems to be very effective for him. Pineda's changeup, that's mostly anecdotal. And, I'm not as confident he's going to feature it heavily, and I'm not as confident it'll be effective for him. I think there's reason for optimism there, but it's not as clear of a case, I think, as Walker. So my enthusiasm really hasn't waned for either of them, but if there's one who I'm more likely to pass up than the other, it's Pineda.
Would you guys rather draft Joe Ross or Taijuan Walker?
I would rather draft Walker.
I think I'd rather have Walker.
Would you rather have a guy who's going right around Taijuan Walker, Hisashi Iwakuma or Taijuan Walker?
Taijuan Walker every day.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
I figured that was the case. All right. How about Francisco Liriano, another guy that Scott talked about as a sleeper, and 10 strikeouts in 4 2/3, 2 runs, 1 walk against Minnesota. I don't know. You know, Heath's not here. He was the one that was sort of pushing back on Scott calling Liriano a sleeper. But Liriano or Taijuan Walker?
You have to draft Taijuan Walker first. If you want both, you take Taijuan Walker first. Liriano, there's a good chance he won't even get drafted in your standard mixed league.
But who do you think's going to have a better year? Who do you like?
I have a greater level of confidence in Liriano. I do think Walker's ultimate upside is higher, but Liriano, like there are very few concerns for me with Liriano.
All right, Chris, I'm ready for you to talk now. Let's talk about closer situations. Rockies and Nationals. What can you tell me?
Well, everyone seems to be working under the assumption now, everyone around the team, and we've talked about this a little bit already, that Greg Holland will end up being the closer. The Rockies actually could have a pretty good deep bullpen, which is kind of an interesting facet about that team. I don't know if we've ever said that about them. I'm still not 100% sure Greg Holland is going to be a very good closer. I have a lot of concerns about him coming back from the injury. I'm not sure he is better than Adam Ottavino at this point, just as a pitcher, but he really does seem to be the closer right now.
What are your concerns specifically with Holland? Because Tommy John surgery, I mean, obviously we know the track record there. It's extensive. It's mostly positive. He's throwing mid-90s. What are you concerned about?
He was pretty mediocre the last time we saw him pitch. He is a 31-year-old who, you know, had a couple of really good seasons, but the last time we saw him pitch, it's really just that he was bad the last time we saw him pitch.
Okay. And you don't think the injury?
I'm sure.
He was in and out of.
I'm sure it does. I don't think it's a guarantee that he gets back to full strength. Pitching in Colorado, that's only going to make things worse. I think he's a little risky.
All right, and Washington, Chris, what's going on with the Nationals closer situation?
Apparently, they still, it's a wide open competition. However, Kota Glover has made his last five appearances in the ninth inning for the Nationals in spring training. That says to me that they at least want to see what he can do in that role, and they seem to really love his upside. Dusty Baker, every time he talks about him, says he's got ninth inning stuff. He's got ninth inning potential. So I'm moving Sean Kelly down a little bit.
You see, Scott, this is why I wait so long to do my drafts. I want to know who the Nationals closer is going to be. Kota Glover in the minors had a 2.09 ERA, and he struck out 104 batters in 86 innings with a .90 whip. I want to know who the Astros' fifth starter is going to be. We got a lot to figure out, I guess. I still want to draft. But
oh, you know. I hear you. I mean, but you were complaining.
Yeah, that's what I do.
You haven't done one yet.
I had been gone for...
You can't have it both ways, Adam.
I've been gone for 4 days.
Or you got to be accurate.
I got to complain about something, you know? all right, so a couple batting order things. You guys mentioned Alex Gordon on the Friday show, and Heath said he had been leading off a lot in spring training. I noticed Jason Wirth batted second the other day, and we knew that there was a possibility Wirth might bat second. But how about these two sort of aging outfielders that don't really hit that well anymore but could get a lot of at-bats? Alex Gordon, Jason Wirth, what are your quick thoughts on those guys for the Royals and the Nationals?
I don't want either.
Yeah,
I've been a little encouraged by Gordon's performance this spring, because it looked like last year he was running out of steam, like in terms of his entire career. So the fact that he's hitting 400 or something this spring with doubles pop is a little encouraging, but not enough for me to really like move him up in my rankings or target him in even a five outfielder league.
I'm definitely more interested in Gordon than Wirth. You know, Gordon's not 38 years old, so that's a big part of it.
No, he's 32 or 33. He had those two seasons, Alex Gordon, where he was just an amazing points league hitter, right? Because he had 45 and 50-ish doubles. He walks a ton. The doubles, I mean, there's like no power there anymore, even doubles. It just doesn't happen. But on-base percentage, you guys talked about it on Friday. It's a guy who's got a great on-base skills and leads off. Could definitely be relevant in points leagues, and that's what you might get from Alex Gordon. You like walks, you like plate appearances. All right, it's busts week. So here we go. This is from Ben in the Metro DC area. First, he has a limerick for us. He says, Dear Hank, Jay, Antonio, and Kyle. I don't know who they are, and it's driving me crazy. I looked it up, couldn't find it. Hank, Jay, Antonio, and Kyle. Yeah. I don't know. Bothering me. There once was a slugger named Trout, a player with speed, a player with clout. He hit the ball hard, most balls left the yard. Another MVP, I have no doubt.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's good. It's cute.
It's got the right rhyming scheme. Some of the ones people have sent in hadn't gotten the rhyming scheme quite right.
Right.
But this one, you know, the AABBA scheme.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to come up with.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
Trying to come up with one off the top of my head. There once was a man named Scott White. his rhymes, they were always right. And that's all I got. So here are some of the busts from Ben. Carlos Carrasco, Jake Arrieta, Zach Britton, and Trey Turner. Dear God, Ben. Carlos Carrasco, Arrieta, Britton, Turner. You just don't like good players.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand the argument for all of these. I mean, Carrasco...
currently hurt. Anytime you can get a player who's currently hurt and call them a bust, pretty good idea.
I don't think he will be a bust. I don't think any of these four will be a bust, just to put that out there, since we're going to entertain the argument of them being busts. I mean Carrasco made a minor league start yesterday, said he felt good, his velocity was normal for this stage of spring training, so it looks like that elbow scare is behind him. And then the other three, I mean, I feel like they're studs at their positions. But to entertain the bust argument, Arrieta, inexplicably high walk rate last year. Zach Britton, just...
I don't actually think there's any bust potential with Zach Britton. Like, he had an 80% ground ball rate last season. He's just an absurdly dominant pitcher.
Well, he hasn't been fully healthy this spring either. Yeah. And Turner, just a product of being overdrafted. So, you know, it really comes down to how much you believe in Turner, whether or not he's worth paying for. And I could see being on the other side of that divide than I am, because it is a small sample size, and he wasn't nearly that good in the minors, as good as he was.
Yeah, I think Arrieta's not a bad option, for sure, as a bus candidate, just because we did see him regress already.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had control issues in the past, right?
Yeah.
So.
And, we've seen a year and a half, basically, of elite production, and we're still kind of drafting him for that.
Okay, this is from Marquise. My 2017 bust is Edwin Encarnacion, career-high K rate, entering his age 33 season. Hi, Heath. I kind of feel like Edwin Encarnacion might be selling out more for power. Tell me I'm just a nervous Indians fan. And Encarnacion was the number 3 first baseman in points last year, number 4 in Roto. I actually have him as 34 years old. 263, he hit 42 home runs, drove in 127. 5 straight seasons with 34 or more homers. He's been at 39 or more in 3 of those 5 years, and 104 RBIs or more in 4 of his last 5 seasons. But yeah, the strikeouts were up. The first 2 months of the season, the walks were pretty down. He ended up 67 walks to 87 strikeouts in his last 4 months. Do you guys see bust potential for Edwin Encarnacion?
I see bust potential. Obviously, I wouldn't rank him as I do if I thought he would be a bust, but the jump in strikeout rate at his age is concerning. You know, just the change of scenery after he's had all his success in Toronto. Cleveland's a good park still, but I could see how that could be a bad thing for him. So I understand calling him a bust. I'm not willing to do it myself.
Over the infinite expanse of time, every player will eventually age to a point where they are no longer a productive major league player. It happens to literally every single baseball player.
Unless they retire first, like David Ortiz.
Like David Ortiz or Barry Bonds were two guys who kind of went out near the top of their game. But I think we agree that at some point David Ortiz would also have stopped being a good baseball player.
Maybe it would have
come when he was 57 years old.
I don't agree.
You know, who knows? So Edwin Encarnacion is getting close to that point. We just don't know at this point when it will be. So it always makes sense to bet against older players. It just depends what the price point is.
Well, it doesn't always make sense to bet against older players, because sometimes they're awesome and you missed out on a great player to take the younger.
No, I just mean in the long run.
Oh, well. Yeah, so he's going
like, we will all die one day.
Well, that's true. He's going after Miguel Cabrera and Joey Votto,
both of whom are old.
Right. And how do you feel about that, though?
Of the 5 first basemen who are clearly in that elite tier, the ones going in the first 2 rounds, Encarnacion is the one that concerns me the most, which is why I rank him at the back of that group.
Yep.
But I mean, there's a bust argument to be made for Miguel Cabrera. There's a bust argument to be made for Joey Votto.
Yep.
There's a bust argument to be made for most every player, but I think it's pretty low probability for all of them, including Encarnacion.
So we obviously spoke about this when we did the first base preview, but it's been so long. And I'm definitely going to repeat some things that we've talked about because it's good to have this information fresh in your mind as you're doing your drafts. You're in the second round and you're looking at these stud first basemen. You have to kind of look at the rest of the first base landscape. If you have concerns about Encarnacion being a bust, and he goes later in the second round, but if you have concerns about Votto and Miguel Cabrera, you know, you could be looking at do I take Corey Seager or Carlos Correa, or do I take Madison Bumgarner or Max Scherzer? Do I take Charlie Blackmon? Or do I take one of these older first basemen who could hit 40 home runs, drive in 110 runs, something like that, and they've been worth the price. But the question is, you know, how do you feel about that risk-reward assessment this year?
One of my favorite things, if I get a pick in the last few of the first round, is to pair Seager with one of those first basemen, usually Cabrera or Joey Votto.
Okay, so you feel like there's a safety net with Seager, even though he's got the oblique thing?
Yeah, I think both of those. I think pairing Seager and either Cabrera or Votto, Encarnacion rarely, just because you have to pick in a different part of the draft, I think. I feel pretty comfortable knowing I'm going to get elite production in four of the five hitting categories from those two guys. And that sets me up really nicely moving forward.
And the thing about Encarnacion, year after year, I feel like he's undervalued. Even if he's a mid-second round pick, it's like there's always question marks attached to him. I think it's just, you know, the batting average is lower. But at the end of the day, he kind of produces. He produces like Cabrera and Votto when at the end of the year in terms of overall fantasy production, yet he doesn't really get the respect that those guys get, I think.
And his slumps tend to garner more concern. You know, each of the last two seasons, I feel like he's gone off to a bit of a slow start. And there's a lot of hand-wringing about Edwin Encarnacion. And, you know, like I said, at some point he's going to stop hitting. At this point, I'm not ready to bet on it.
Okay, that little first base discussion there. Let's look at the news and notes, guys, and we'll get to spring risers and spring fallers. Not too many, but we have a lot to talk about today. Oh, it's Team Name Tuesday. Got some fun ones and some questions for Chris. We're putting him on the spot.
Oh.
Yeah. Michael Brantley singled twice yesterday as he is back in action. I know you guys spoke about him a lot. A.J. Pollock played in a minor league game. Josh Donaldson's going to play third base on Wednesday. He's back hitting. He's not playing the field yet. So all these guys are making progress. Brantley, Pollock, and Donaldson. They are all studs or were once studs. Do you guys have anything to say about them, or should you just let the news speak for itself?
I mean, a couple more games from Brantley, and I think I seriously need to look into moving him up the rankings, and maybe not just a small bump either. I mean, if he's healthy, you're talking about guy who we were like a second, third round caliber player.
He was Mookie Betts before Mookie Betts, really.
Ooh, that's Mookie Betts was closer to 30-30 than Brantley.
Didn't have the 30 homer season, but he was a 20-20 guy with a ton of runs, high on base or high batting average, never struck out.
Never.
He was a really good player.
I understand what he's saying about Mookie Betts. Who we thought Mookie Betts was going into last year is about what Michael Brantley was, and that Mookie Betts was a late second round.
And
so,
Mookie Betts was one of the, or Michael Brantley was one of the five best hitters in baseball. His was it 2014 season?
His 2014 season,
he was the number two outfielder,
the second best outfielder in fantasy behind Trout.
Yep. Yeah. He had 45 doubles. He had 20 points. No, in Roto too. He had 327, 20 homers, 23 steals, 52 walks, 56 strikeouts, 45 doubles in 156 games. Another thing with Brantley, I think it's worth noting, like, he did come back last year from the shoulder, and then he got the biceps injury. So,
It was all related. His surgery this offseason was to reattach muscle to bone in the shoulder. I mean, grizzly stuff.
Whatever.
But, it seemed like a more conclusive solution than any they had last year. So, I mean, if he looks right playing again, then we need to take his return seriously, because obviously the upside is enormous.
Yeah, and I just love the fact that his biggest strength, Michael Brantley, is that he makes contact so often, and I feel like that's not a skill that's going to go away after the injury. Look, I know I'm the high guy on Didi Gregorius. I still believe in him. I'm very disappointed he has a shoulder injury. He's had a very good World Baseball Classic.
Yes.
But that's over. And, by the way, big USA game tonight. Hope you all watch. And Didi's got the shoulder injury. They are not going to promote Gleyber Torres. The Yankees, whoever they...
No, that's not surprising.
No. Whoever they put in there will likely not be fantasy relevant, whether it's Tyler Wade or Ronald Torres. But this kind of stinks. And again, I've got one team so far. We've got Didi Gregorius, Jason Kipnis, Devin Travis, Tom Murphy. That's another reason why I want to draft. I've already got the most injured team that anyone has.
And the Gregorius injury is weird because it's not, it's like a bruise, right? It's a hematoma.
It might not be that bad.
Around his shoulder, but it's like in the rib cage area as well. I was reading about it and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. It doesn't sound like it's like a structural issue.
Yeah, it might not be that bad. We should know more tomorrow. Adrian Gonzalez is still bothered by an elbow injury. Would you rather have Adrian Gonzalez or Mike Napoli?
I'd rather have Napoli. Yeah. I think in either format.
Would you rather have Adrian Gonzalez or Scott White, Spring Riser, Greg Bird?
I think Bird at this point, unless it's like an NL, well, if it's an NL only league, then the choice is obvious, but a really deep league where safety is a major issue for you, I think I'd rather take Bird.
Okay, how about Yasiel Puig with calf tightness? And it just, he just seems sort of prone to these types of muscle injuries, Puig. So he's dealing with that. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Reds closer, Raisel Iglesias, and we say closer, but it could be a committee situation there. He will have his back and his elbow examined. If there's a problem with Raisel Iglesias, who's the next man up in that bullpen?
I would think it's Michael Lorenzen, who had pretty good numbers as a reliever last year and would probably be a part of that committee if there is one. But there's also Drew Storen, who closing experience. Can't dismiss the possibility of Tony Cingrani getting some save chances. I think Lorenzen be the guy at target, though.
Devin Mesoraco may not be ready for the start of the season. They're just taking it slowly with him. Julio Arias will not make the Dodgers rotation out of spring training. More about Arias in a bit. And Nate Karnes is in the Royals rotation. Okay, spring risers, spring fallers. So I said, give me some names, even if they are repeats. That's fine this time of year. We want to hammer home who we like. So Scott gave me two. Chris gave me one of each. Scott was compensating for Heath. Thank you, Scott. And you have Greg Bird and Taijuan Walker. We'd say we talked about Taijuan Walker, but how about Greg Bird, what you're seeing from him with a 421 batting average, four home runs in the spring after having an 871 OPS in 2015?
Yeah, we actually talked about Bird and Walker both quite a bit yesterday, but in case you weren't listening or hearing.
I was.
Because you may have been listening but not hearing me. Mm-hmm. Hear me now. Greg Bird has had the most impressive spring of any hitter coming off, and he was coming off a shoulder surgery that cost him his whole 2015 season. So, you know, obviously coming into spring training, there were some concerns about whether or not he'd even be back to form. Certainly answered those questions, which makes Chris Carter kind of just... oh, what's the word? Unnecessary.
Right.
There for the Yankees. But, of course, Carter bats right-handed, Bird bats left-handed. It would seem like an obvious platoon situation. Well, Joe Girardi's talking now like Chris Carter's playing time is going to depend on how Bird performs against left-handed pitchers. So, I don't know if he'll be 100% full-time to start the year, Bird, but I think eventually... based on what he's shown this spring, what he showed late in 2015, what he showed in the minors, I think eventually he's going to be the Yankees' everyday first baseman, a left-handed hitter with power at that stadium, also a guy with good plate discipline.
That's the one thing I wonder is how good is the power? And maybe it'll just play up being at Yankee Stadium and it won't matter, but he wasn't a great home run hitter in the minors. He was more of a 15 to 20 homer guy.
There are few great home run hitters in the minors, I feel like.
Yeah.
And the fact he came up and hit 11 in 157 at bats with I think it was a pretty even split home and away, too. Like the Yankees love him. The Yankees love him. They love his upside, and it's kind of getting easy to see why based on the way he's performed this spring.
And I mentioned this at one point, Brian Cashman said Greg Bird was our best prospect. He was a better prospect than even Gary Sanchez.
So in his estimation, I think a lot of the people who rank prospects would disagree, but that's, you know, Yankees GM's opinion certainly counts for a lot.
It should, I would think.
Yeah.
Taiwan Walker's a riser for Scott. Jacob deGrom. Oh, I love all the New York stuff. People love East Coast bias. We love it. New York. Jacob deGrom is a riser for Chris.
Yeah, we're all biased towards the Grapefruit League. Sorry, Cactus League. Jacob deGrom, big thing. I mean, the production's been there. 16 and two-thirds innings, only 3 earned runs allowed, 1.62 ERA, 15 strikeouts, only 2 walks. The bigger thing is his, all that velocity that we were concerned about him losing a year ago at this time when he was throwing 92, 93, that seems to have come all the way back. He's been working 95, 96, 97 in the spring, according to reports. That seems like a big deal to me. I think he could have a huge season.
He was an ace a couple years ago. Is Jacob deGrom an ace now, a fantasy ace?
There, we were lacking that 12th ace, I believe it was, after like Johnny Cueto and Yu Darvish. That next guy was kind of up in the air at the start of spring training. I think it's definitively deGrom now.
Yep.
And part of that has to do with David Price's and Carlos Carrasco's health. But deGrom clearly over Strasburg for me, and Chris Archer, anyone else who might enter that discussion. He doesn't have the workload track record that most of those other aces have, but otherwise he's right there.
Are you guys going Darvish or deGrom?
I'm moving deGrom above Darvish right now.
I'll take Darvish, but, you know, either or.
Chris, I know you with your pitching philosophy. Are you taking Jacob deGrom or Lance McCullers?
See, I would say, yeah, I would definitely take Jacob deGrom, but I actually think Jacob deGrom is one of the starting pitchers that I would be willing to draft just because I think he's probably being undervalued a little bit at this point. He's his ADP is 61 overall. He's one of the guys I would be willing to take in like the fifth round.
Okay, yeah, and we want to talk about spring fallers and go to Matt Harvey, Jacob deGrom's teammate. But first, it's time to get some tickets. It's time to save some money. Use the SeatGeek app for sports, for concerts, comedy, theater, whatever you want. Use SeatGeek and use our promo code FANTASY when you buy tickets. You're going to get $20 back after your first SeatGeek purchase. So SeatGeek's awesome. I tell all my friends about SeatGeek. I use SeatGeek whenever I need seats. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. So think about that. Instead of you doing all the work, looking all over the internet for bargains, SeatGeek does it all for you, and that's just such an easy way to get tickets. SeatGeek also grades every ticket based on value, so you look up an event, you immediately see your best deals, and every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Now let's get that $20 rebate, people. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, and enter the promo code FANTASY, all caps, FANTASY. SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY. Speaking of fantasy, fantasy faller right now, Matt Harvey. Now, the velocity was better, Chris. He felt better about his last start, which was yesterday, but 7 hits, 3 runs in 4 1/3 for Matt Harvey, no walks, 4 strikeouts. What do you think?
Something that seems to be happening with him every time out, and I think it's especially been true the last two, he seems to pitch really well the first couple of innings, and then the last inning he just completely runs out of gas and gets shelled. You can look at that as a positive and say, well, it happened in the fourth inning in his start against the Marlins on March 15th. Then on March 20th against the Tigers, it happened in the fifth inning. So he seems to be building up. You can make that case. I just don't think it's a particularly appealing one. Maybe the velocity comes back. Maybe he can be Matt Harvey again. But what we've seen in his career is, and there's actually a really good thing on Fangraphs, there was a chart showing his results based on his velocity when he works 91, 92, 92, 93, etc. And his whiff rate naturally goes down as his velocity goes down. I'm not sure he's going to be able to pitch as effectively working 93, 94 as opposed to 96.
I think that's fair to say. And I do agree he's a spring training faller. I mean, I moved him from like 25th to 42nd in my starting pitcher rankings. But for me, it's for different reasons. I still feel like the track record of this procedure is very encouraging. And what we've seen from Harvey is mostly just a matter of him trying to come back from it in 8 months' time, which may just be too little. Alex Cobb, when he had it back in 2011, said he needed a full year. I don't think every pitcher needs a full year. Mike Fultonevich, who in terms of velocity is probably the closest comp to Harvey, actually throws a little harder than Harvey. He had it August of 2015, and by May of last year, he was pretty much back to normal. So it may take Harvey until May. I think the fact that he gained 2 or 3 miles per hour on his fastball just in a matter of 4 starts is encouraging. I don't know that he'll be retro Matt Harvey from the get-go this year. He may even have to spend some time in extended spring training. But I think by like early May, mid-May, maybe late May, we're still talking good 2/3 of the season left. It's very likely he's throwing 98 again.
I don't agree that it's very likely. It's possible. But if I have to wait a month and a half just for the chance of Matt Harvey.
So you think Mike Fultonevich was just this exceptional case and we shouldn't be using him
standard? When it comes to something like that, I need a lot more data than just one.
But there is a lot of data. If you look at the article I wrote about Harvey and this procedure a month ago, just about every pitcher, I couldn't find a single pitcher who was definitively hurt by this procedure or the injury that led up to it. And most of them ended up better after it.
But we can look at Matt Harvey and say he was really, really bad last year. And that was
because he was hurt.
He was clearly hurt. I mean, this guy was one of the best pitchers in baseball. Let's give him credit here. You know, you've got to factor in the injury when you look at last year's performance.
He deserves credit, but he was really bad last year. And his velocity was down, but he was still averaging 94.5 with his fastball.
He was hurt. They discovered the injury. They shut him down. I don't know what else you're trying to sneak into that narrative.
I'm not trying to sneak anything.
Sneaky, Chris Towers.
He was bad and hurt. He's bad right now. His velocity's down. So I have to wish on him figuring something out at some point.
Or just getting better.
Well, after I draft him. I can just draft someone.
Rehabilitation
who's not
hurt. Is a lengthy process.
Sure.
And I think what's happening here is Matt Harvey is such a high profile pitcher. He's in a market with a rabid media. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's just watching him a little too closely. He's in the middle of rehabilitating right now. Mm-hmm. And that's
right. And,
what people
and
don't seem
don't
to understand.
You don't have to draft starting pitchers who are in the middle of a rehabilitation process in the 9th round.
Fair.
Like that,
fair.
That's.
And I don't think he should be drafted in the 9th round. And so, again, I agree he's a faller this spring. But
like, I would rather have McCullers. I would rather have Paxton. I would rather, at the price, I would definitely rather have Carlos Rodon.
I agree with all of those cases. And I think Harvey's right after Rodon for me, actually. So I just don't want – like, I feel like the narrative around Harvey has been so negative this spring that now it's like, you can get him in round 15, potentially. People are just like, I don't want anything to do with this guy. I don't want people to pass him up that much because it's reasonable that for 2/3 of the season, he's going to be an ace.
Okay. And Scott says Julio Urias and Jordan Zimmermann are fallers. Are either Julio Urias, who's not going to make the Dodgers rotation out of camp, or Jordan Zimmermann, who's just had a dreadful spring, are either of them worth drafting in a 12-team mixed league?
Yes. They both are.
Okay.
Arias earlier, because I think it's, you know, it might be a timeline very much like Harvey's, the one I laid out for Harvey, where from May forward, he's somebody who you'll have a hard time benching. But Zimmermann, like, I don't know what there is to get optimistic about with Zimmermann anymore. Like, he was a pitcher who, after the year he had, and you know, obviously there were injuries, he got an injection in his neck as recently as December for the issues going on there. You could make the case that, okay, it was just an injury-plagued year, and that's why it was such a disaster. But for him to continue the disaster this spring, maybe completely irrelevant, maybe just a case of a veteran who knows exactly what he's doing, doing exactly what he needs to do to get ready. But, like, he doesn't get that benefit of the doubt after the year he just had. So it's just late-round flyer for him.
I know you like Brandon Finnegan, Scott. Would you take Finnegan or Zimmerman?
Finnegan.
All right.
Anyone with strikeout upside.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit of strategy and you know, we got a lot here. We got 25 minutes left. Let's rock and roll. So email of the day, number one, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Blake in Santa Barbara. Dear Ashley, Jazz, Hillary, and Carlton.
Oh, we all know it.
We all know it. I've got the fifth pick in my 12-team OPS Roto League. I never like to take risks early, but I suspect Kershaw will be there staring at me with the fifth. Ooh, that's intimidating. With the fifth overall pick. Do I take Clayton Kershaw or just grab Nolan Arenado and breathe easier?
Arenado. Breathe easier.
We all have Arenado higher.
But I definitely put this question in because Kershaw, you know, he did actually give up 3 home runs in his last start. But he was just breezing through spring training and looked apparently great, like no back issues at all. Based on spring, you could think that Kershaw is having Kershaw is fine based on spring. Like, have you bumped him up at all? Have you gotten a little more comfortable with Kershaw in the first round?
I have gotten a little more comfortable. I would call him a spring riser in his own small way, just because he's continued to put my mind at ease, as he did after he got back from the back injury during the playoffs last year. So a little more comfortable than I was before spring started.
Is he still after, you know, Rizzo and Donaldson, Machado, like all the elite hitters?
For me, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Would you take Bryce Harper or Kershaw?
Kershaw.
I think I'd take Bryce Harper because you want to talk encouraging frames.
Yeah. He is, he's been ridiculous. 6 home runs already.
Who cares?
7 walks, 5 strikeouts.
Who cares? We know who he is. We know he's a great hitter.
Well, we don't know who he is.
We do not know who Bryce Harper is.
We know who Bryce Harper can be. We know he's been a low 800 OPS bat every season but one.
I pretty much buy that he is one of the very best hitters in baseball when he's healthy, just never healthy.
Then it really shouldn't.
All right, then, yeah, take him over Chris Bryant, Manny Machado, and Anthony Rizzo. And
no, that's what I was going to say until he added he's just never healthy.
He's never healthy, yeah. I don't think Bryce Harper has a healthy season. And I don't mean, like, plays 150 games. I mean, because last year he was playing hurt, according to many reports. I don't think there's a chance that Harper plays a healthy season and just has, like, a low 800 OPS. That would surprise me.
Maybe.
All right, but what do I know? Email of the day number 2 from Mike in New York City. There were some early disagreements on the value of taking a flyer on Garrett Richards, but I saw a report that Richards was hitting 97 miles per hour, maybe even 99. Does that move the needle for you guys? This makes me want to own Garrett Richards everywhere. Long live science.
So I looked this up, actually. His velocity in the spring, from what's been tracked by Brooks Baseball, is actually higher than his average fastball velocity was last season for the full regular season. Seems encouraging.
It does.
His spring velocity last year was actually even higher than it is this season. I don't think anybody's doubting that Garrett Richards could be effective. I think we're doubting that he's going to ever throw 7 innings in a start or that he's going to throw 150 innings this season. He's a relatively high upside pitcher who has a pretty hard ceiling, I think.
Yeah, 100 pitches is what they said. And that was the game changer for me because I was all long-lived science. Richards was in my sleepers 1.0, and then I heard about this hard cap of 100 innings. He's not a very efficient pitcher.
100 pitches. Yeah. You said innings.
And not a pitcher who's put up like huge strikeout numbers in the past where you can live with him throwing 170 innings, like, say, you know, Michael Pineda. Those type of strikeout numbers.
Scott, let me ask you this, because I said this on a show that you weren't on. I just don't buy the hard cap of 100 pitches. I just feel like it's stupid. it hurts your team. And if they were going to do that, they made a huge mistake by not having Garrett Richards get Tommy John surgery. Like, I don't
I don't think it's forevermore. I think it's just he pitched so few innings last year that they don't want to, you know, and anybody coming off Tommy John surgery would have a similar cap of some kind. It's more often than not an innings cap than a pitches cap. I think they just want him around for as much of the season as they can.
All right, that's fine. I don't know. Like, hard cap, 100 pitches just seems unrealistic. He starts an inning with 90 pitches. I think they'll let him go 105.
It's fair to wonder if they'll loosen that requirement as the season goes on. I feel like that usually happens with these kinds of limits. It's just how long will it take? And
that doesn't erase the injury concerns.
It also doesn't
huge and very real.
It doesn't erase Team Name Tuesday, because you can't erase Team Name Tuesday. And, you know, even if I forget about it, then it becomes Team Name Wednesday, and I forget again, it becomes Team Name Thursday. But
usually becomes Team Name Thursday.
Yeah, or Friday, or even Saturday. Team Name Tuesday from the, as you know, I like to sing, from the Vegan Pagan, only the good Tyone.
That's a very good one.
That is good. From Paul, a proud Michigander. Hope I said that right. And I may have read this one already, so I apologize, but make Comerica great again.
That one's a good one.
That's pretty good. And Chad from L.A., Duffy the Umpire Slayer.
That's very good.
Yeah.
What about keeping the Billy Joel theme going? Scenes from an Italian Riz Tyrant.
No.
Anthony Rizzo?
No, that's bad.
Scenes from an Italian restaurant? It's a Billy Joel song?
Well, I know the song. It's a terrific song.
Explaining it's not making it better.
You know what I realized this morning? I was listening to that song, actually. There's only one scene from an Italian restaurant in that song. Very misleading. Sad.
Huh. But they talk about it at the beginning and the end, right?
No, but it's just one scene. It's the same two people.
Who, Brenda and Eddie? Or just the people who are talking about Brenda and Eddie?
The unnamed narrators who are discussing Brenda and Eddie.
Brenda and Eddie, okay. Great song. All right, let's ask Chris Towers some questions here. Number one, Chris Towers, who will you root for if the World Baseball Classic final is USA versus Puerto Rico?
I will root for baseball.
What a loser answer that
is. I am, like, my sympathies are directly split. My mother is from Puerto Rico. She's from Ponce, a small town on the southwest corner of the island, or southwest side. And my father's an American, so my loyalties are directly split. I'm going to root for both.
Where do you feel like you're from, Chris?
I'm an American, but okay. The Puerto Rican part of me is irreplaceable. And I love this Puerto Rican team. They are so much dang fun. This is like one of the most fun baseball teams I've ever seen.
Well, I think we just got our answer there. And second question, have you or will you dye your hair or beard blonde?
You know, I've got blonde flecks in my beard, I've realized, as I age. So I think that's enough.
That's called gray, Chris. That's gray.
They're blonde.
All right, now
I get blonder as I get older.
We've talked a lot about Chris's pitcher strategy, zero SP and whatnot. Not that he's going to do it every time, not a hard and fast rule. But would you like to just set the stage and give the, like, 10-second, what is your pitching strategy answer?
Pitchers are inherently risky. We see it every year. Some number of ace, quote-unquote, pitchers struggle every season, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to invest heavily in the position.
But you
target
wait,
upside later.
You wait till, like, typically what, round what, to grab a pitcher?
I would say I usually have my first pitcher by round 8.
All right. So that's a little better, because you're painting a picture of, like, Lance McCullers as your first pitcher.
No. It's usually someone in the... I don't think I've ever taken someone earlier than, like, Steven Strasburg. But it's usually someone in the, like, Carlos Martinez, Carlos Carrasco, Zach Greinke range.
All right. So then I really don't have any questions for you, because that was my whole thing. Like, I was going to say, like, why not just go for that range of pitcher, guys that have, like, more of a realistic chance of being an ace? But it seems you're doing that.
I have in a 10-team league, I am currently putting together a zero SP roster.
Good.
It wasn't by design. It's a league where there's a premium on hitters because of some weird scoring rules, but it kind of left me out in the cold in pitchers, my overemphasis on hitters. 10-team league, again. The first pitcher I drafted was Matt Harvey. Now, this was a little more confident in Harvey.
Yeah.
So let's not actually call him my first pitcher, but he's on the roster. Aaron Sanchez, Steven Matz, Sean Manaea, Robbie Ray, Vince Velasquez, Matt Shoemaker, Ian Kennedy. That's what it's looking like right now.
So that's a lot of really good pitchers.
No, that's terrible. That's like a bad, that's a terrible pitching staff.
Do you feel like there's enough high variance among those arms that, like, would you feel, I don't know if confidence is the right word, but would you feel?
I would feel like I have a chance.
It's workable.
Like that's all it is. I just think pitchers are so inherently risky. They're throwing baseballs 100 miles an hour. You're going to get hurt at some point. That just give me guys that have a chance. I'm not looking in the later rounds to draft Jordan Zimmermann because I can get Dylan Bundy at the same price, and Dylan Bundy at least has a chance to take a big step forward and be an ace.
Yeah.
So that's really what it is. It's just that I'm trying to mitigate risk early in the draft and then kind of maximize my risk later on.
So I think that Dylan Bundy has a very, very small chance of being a fantasy ace. Like, on a per-inning basis, maybe, but I think I was just kind of looking back at the last 3 years of who finished at the top, in the top 10. And let's look at last year's top 10. I'll even do Roto, so innings aren't quite as big of a factor. Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, John Lester, Bumgarner, Porcello, Kershaw, of course he had only 149 innings, Kluber, Hendricks, Sale, Cueto.
Yep, like, some of those guys were definitely drafted as aces.
About
half of them.
But these are not like young pitchers who have never done it before.
Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, Kyle Hendricks.
He actually didn't have the ace workload though. He had 190 innings and just was so
he was just really good.
Yeah.
Let's go to 2015.
I actually think Johnny Cueto is a really good example of a guy that a lot of people were scared off of last season. But still, he was able. He was someone that looked risky, but was the price became so good that I actually ended up drafting him a ton last season. I thought he was undervalued, and he ended up having a really good season.
He's done it before, though. That's the thing. He's been an ace many, many times.
Sure, it's not just guys who have never done it before. Like I don't mind taking Dallas Keuchel a little later because he's someone who's done it before. Yeah. I think Felix Hernandez is actually a pretty solid value in the 10th round right now.
Okay.
We both talked about how we like Liriano.
Who's undrafted right now.
Now, Ian Kennedy is a guy who I feel like I get every draft. Like, nobody seems to care about him.
If you want, he's one of those guys that if you want him, you can get him every draft.
And I feel like he has a little of that in his history, scattered, but he's had a couple seasons where he was legitimately high end. And I mean, he's always had a high strikeout rate. Last year, he had like 184 strikeouts. The issues for him have been walks and home runs. Pitching in Kansas City helps with the home run issue quite a bit. He had a very strong finish last year. The walk issue, I mean, that comes and goes. It's hard to predict exactly where that's going to end up. But is that, like, we don't think of him as an upside pitcher. We think of him as just cheap innings.
Yeah.
I think there's some upside there that I kind of liked having him in this high variance staff because it's like there's some innings to fall back on there that maybe the Steven Matz and Vince Velasquez types won't give you.
Yeah.
But then there's still a little bit of upside on the next layer there.
So that's Ian Kennedy you're talking about. I would really say he had one. I forget what the term you use was. High end?
Yeah.
One high end year, in my opinion. 21-4, 2.88 ERA in 2011. He was incredible. His next best year, 2014, 13-13, 3.63 ERA, struck out 207 batters in 201 innings. It's pretty good.
Yeah, high end may be a little strong, but that season he was certainly a staple in people's lineups.
He's such a tease. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Kennedy is probably going to have a really good stretch.
Yeah,
I feel like last year he was one of the pleasant surprises at the beginning, and then he just, you know, he's such a tease. Very frustrating pitcher.
He was at his best toward the end of the year.
Well, was it like top heavy, and then middle was bad, and then end was good? I'm not sure.
Let me look at the breakdown.
Look it up. Break it down.
I will say while you're looking that up, I also, you know, I can get my ace in the 9th or 10th round with James Paxton. So
So his ERA by month, April 277, May 324, June 583, July 496, August 186, September 379. So four of the 6 months, he was somebody you absolutely wanted in your
what?
Lineup.
No. What was his ERA in August?
186.
In September.
September. 379.
No, you cannot say a 379 ERA is someone you absolutely want in your lineup.
Well, here's... In June and July were the two really high ERA months. He had a 119 whip, 8 strikeouts per 9 in June. In July, he had a 129 whip, so a little higher, but 10.5 strikeouts per 9. He was still doing good things amid his struggles. Like, I just feel like he's a little undervalued.
Okay, hey, look, that's fine.
He's one of those pitchers that's essentially available for free, and like Jeff Samardzija goes 100 spots ahead of him. I think that's one where I would much rather just wait, taking in Kennedy 5 or 6 rounds later, and at least have some semblance of a chance of upside.
So the email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Before we finish the show with your emails, I'm talking real quick. Give me your thoughts on these players. Philly starting pitchers Jared Eichhoff and Jeremy Hellickson, both top 35 pitchers last year. Hellickson's going to get the opening day start. Eichhoff and Hellickson, quick thoughts, go!
Eichhoff had 9 strikeouts his last spring start and has been working on adding a changeup to the mix this year. It would be a difference maker against left-handed hitters, who he was bad against. And I think it would up his strikeout potential, so I'm starting to move him up.
I think he's very interesting.
Jared Eichhoff is interesting. How about Ronaldo Lopez, White Sox starting pitcher? 6 scoreless innings with 4 strikeouts against the Giants. Wasn't a great lineup. 2 hits yesterday, and is actually...
His last 3 starts have been phenomenal.
Right. Yeah, phenomenal. Now the strikeouts haven't been there, though.
He's added the Don Cooper cutter.
Ronaldo Lopez.
Yeah, which was... The Don Cooper cutter was a thing before the Dan Worthen slider was. I think he's going to beat Lucas Giolito to the big leagues.
I will be very interested in him when he gets called up, whether he makes the rotation out of spring, which still seems like a long shot, or if he gets called up.
Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson just signed a 6-year, $25.5 million deal. Anderson played 99 games last year. He batted .283 with 9 home runs and 10 steals, but dreadful plate discipline. 13 walks.
Where's Heath when you need him?
Yeah, 117 strikeouts to 13 walks. Wow.
I keep interrupting. Sorry.
Well, this
God,
is like
it, Chris.
15 homer, 20 steal pace ish. I don't know if that's true, but it can't be far off based on last year.
The counting stats could be pretty good for him. I just worry that the plate discipline, the lack of plate discipline, creates such a low floor that. I mean, I don't want him as my starting shortstop, that's for sure. And I don't think in standard mixed leagues he's getting drafted, except maybe as a middle infield type in a roto league. But even then, you're talking about a starter. So, like, I go for, like, a Joe Panic type at that same point instead.
Okay. Pablo Sandoval doubled twice yesterday. Sandoval is hitting .349 with 4 doubles in spring training, Chris.
I'm not particularly interested in, but I... Sure.
Okay.
Good. I mean, it's nice to see. I don't think he should be drafted, but if he has a nice first couple of weeks, then I can take notice.
Should any of these next 3 hitters be drafted? Byung-ho Park for the Twins, batting .394 with 4 home runs. Outfielder Bradley Zimmer for the Indians hit his 3rd home run of the spring, and outfielder Jose Martinez for the Cardinals is just killing it. Byung-ho Park, Bradley Zimmer, Jose Martinez.
I think the 3 top prospect hitters to stash in fantasy right now, and if you think of somebody I'm forgetting, tell me, because this is off the top of the head, would be Yoan Moncada, Bradley Zimmer, and Lewis Brinson. So Zimmer among them.
It's possible the Kipnis injury makes it more possible for them to find playing time for him. If Jose Ramirez ends up just playing second base full-time, that limits some of the exposure that he had in the outfield last year as well.
I think it's going to take him just, well, obviously an injury situation, but Zimmer just flat-out overtaking Chisenhall. He'll need to be better at AAA, Zimmer will, than he was last year, has some strikeout issues. But like the complete package reminds me very much of Grady Sizemore when he was first coming up, which, you know, we're talking over 10 years ago at this point. But that was a... a player who also had contact issues that limited his batting average, but he was so good with...
And was one of the best players in baseball.
So good with walks, home runs, and steals that he was getting drafted in the first round eventually in fantasy. I could see Zimmer, obviously talking a best-case scenario, but I could see him developing into that kind of player.
And
I will never be able to give up on Byung-ho Park.
Oh, really?
It's more about having a job, but I still think the talent's there. He crushes the ball. He's got some of the best raw power in baseball.
When do we get concerned about Josh Bell for Pittsburgh? Their first baseman is 2-for-21 with no extra base hits, 5 walks, 8 strikeouts this spring.
What's weird is the strikeouts, like so many of them for a guy who plate discipline's like his main skill. I think he's back too early, but you know, worry. I think there's a chance he begins the year in the minors or extend his spring training because of that. Yeah, I don't worry about him in the long term sense, but just that he may not be ready. I think that's a realistic concern.
Still like him for a late round flyer, though.
Okay, here's an email from no name. I messed that up again. But you got to put your name in the signature, not just you know, not just where you sent it to me. Dear Andy, Howard, Floyd, and Barney, that's the Andy Griffith Show. What's the best way to approach pitching in a 20-team 5x5 categories league?
You need an ace.
I don't know if I agree with that. In our podcast for the People League last year, it was definitely not 20 teams.
It was 16, right?
Heath always says 14. I thought it was 16. It was very deep. I actually did not get an ace. I had a very balanced pitching staff. Now, I think I may have drafted Lester, but...
But you got an ace.
But I didn't draft him as an ace. I just kind of fell into that.
You got lucky.
Yeah, but
I mean, Lester was basically an ace last year. He was ranked lower than he was going into this year, but, I mean, that was a very large ace tier we were dealing with last year. Like, I would have classified him as an ace then and an ace now.
I may not have had
like,
him.
Like, Strasburg could be your ace. You get in a league that deep, there could be a run that completely takes you out of the ace conversation. So, it could be DeGrom. I think Cole Hamels could pass as an ace in that format.
Yeah.
But I just think you need somebody you can trust at the top of your rotation, because if you go entirely high variance, like there's nothing to fall back on like there is in a shallower league.
Okay. Next email from Sal from LA. What's the best way to manage your queue on draft day?
I kind of just do it by tier. Like I look at like, here are the next 4 or 5 guys that I would be comfortable drafting. And I just throw them in there. As soon as they start going, then I'm like, okay, that's when I know I need to take some.
Works for me. Now, I like putting late round sleepers in my queue, just so I don't forget about them. But the problem is, you better be paying attention. If you don't, if you get auto drafted, you will take your late round sleeper in round 5 or whatever you auto draft.
Does that explain why you've gotten Luis Severino so many times?
That explains why I nominated him. Yes,
that's,
it does.
That's the other thing. Even if you have a commissioner willing to back it out, like, you just spoiled one of your sleepers.
Yeah. He might not be a late round sleeper for me anymore, Severino. I'm not sure he's making that rotation. We'll keep an eye on that. Okay, that's it for the show. Thank you, Chris and Scott. We'll have Heath on tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. I actually kind of want to do a mock draft tomorrow, so pay attention on Twitter. Bye.
Bye.